overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Welcome to all of you in virtual land and to this beautiful community that showed up here at the center with their masks on. Let's navigate this Sunday morning by bringing our attention to our breath. And notice how the breath is always offering itself to us in every moment. And so as we simplify our intention to just observe the breath. Thich Nhat Hanh, when he teaches meditation, he says, breathing in, I breathe in. Breathing out, I breathe out. And then he says, in, out. And as we practice this simple conscious breath, we can observe how the binary mind, that little monkey mind that we have, that's always chatting within our heads, it becomes quiet. It just like sits down. So see your little monkey mind just coming to rest, your binary mind. And your attention is on this benign breath that moves in and moves out. Now notice who you are this morning. Just notice who you are. Is there some anxiousness that's arising within you? Is there any feeling that you can observe? Pema Chodron's new book is called Welcoming the Unwelcome. And she has a simple little acronym called LESR. And the L is locate what is arising within you. So when I ask you, where are you today? Locate what might be a concern. Maybe a felt something that is arising within you. Each one of us is unique that way. And the E stands for embrace it. So I have a little anxiety around this COVID thing and my sister-in-law who has cancer of the tongue and various things that concern me. So as I locate that within and I embrace it, it's held. It's in a holding place now. I'm not running away from that feeling. The S stands for stop telling a story about it. So it's just a feeling that you locate. Maybe it's in your chest. Maybe it's in your stomach. Maybe you're sick to your stomach over something. And so we're embracing that felt awareness, but we're not creating a narrative around it. So it's just a feeling. It's just an emotion, perhaps. And by the willingness to embrace it, like you would hold a crying child, after a while, that crying child stops crying. Or when that emotion is felt, embraced, without a story, it has a way of mutating and shifting into a different felt awareness. Maybe acceptance begins to flower within you. It does usually for me. And the R in the LESR is remain there. Remain in this compassionate, tender, loving space that has arisen from within, that is meeting what arises, and we're welcoming the unwelcome. We're no longer denying it, we're no longer pushing it away. But we're saying, yes, it's okay. It's okay to have this feeling. And once the feeling is allowed, a peace begins to flow through the breath. A deep acceptance arises from within. And we realize that we're no longer bound by that emotion or thought pattern, but in a strange way, we're free by allowing it to exist. We notice the binary mind, our local mind, and it exists within a larger mind, an infinite intelligence, an awareness that is awake and even loving. And that contains our local mind, but with by its very nature has an addictive pattern. It chooses its thoughts that it likes. It wants to reject thoughts that it doesn't like. And when we move out of the addictive thought pattern, we're free of our own self-inflicted nonsense. And we'd rather be attending to the breath than spiraling out in an emotional thought pattern of reaction, judgment, opinion, or whatever the story might be. So notice how skillful you are at just simply breathing. This Sunday, let us plant wise intentions from within that will assist us in assuming the consciousness that is required for us to navigate skillfully during these troubled times. Observe the breath, how it breathes you, how it's always there. And we could rest in that. Feeling gratitude for this spiritual muscle that develops with practice. Gratitude for a quiet mind. Gratitude for an open heart. Gratitude for a healthy body. That is smart because it wears a mask. It's tough because it's toughing out this challenge we're all facing together, and it's united. We're not separate anymore. And in this trinity of being, we navigate. And we shift into freedom, a freedom that's always there, the freedom to choose who we will be in this moment, awake, loving, kind, Ask your own heart what it chooses, and then honor that. Heed the message from your own heart. Heed the teacher within your own heart. When you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes and look around at your own self. It's all you. Everybody looks so safe and beautiful out there with your multicolored masks on. I've got red out there, I've got blue, I've got kitty cat puppy dog masks, I've got black masks, fashionable designer masks, and some people even coordinate it with their outfit. I think that's beautiful. I don't have that repertoire. I just had the simple basic mask, but it serves me very well. But I'll take it off for this little purpose of this talk so that you can hear me out there in the virtual world. And so today is the last talk in a series on shifting into freedom. a book by Locke Kelly that I taught here a couple summers ago. And I like what Locke Kelly says because it speaks to my logical mind. He's very masculine in his approach. And he said there are three phases. He says, first, there's a waking up phase. There is this something within us that wakes up, this creative intelligence. You could call it the Christ consciousness, the Buddha consciousness, the presence, Eckhart Tolle would call it. It wakes up within us. And it says you're more than what you think you are. You're not that simple little local. It's like the ocean wakes up within the drop. Oh my God, I'm the ocean of life. And I've been selling myself short for the drop. Emerson says in his essay, The Oversoul, he says, we misrepresent ourselves. We've sold ourselves for rags and riches, when in truth we are something so ineffable, something so big. He said, if we knew who we really are, we would fall to our knees. We are the Oversoul expressing of the one life through us. So that wakes up. Then the second phase, Locke Kelly says, is a waking in. And this is the work you do on yourself, where you take this creative intelligence and you begin to meet your unhealed stuff. I was talking to my prayer partner today in Vancouver, and he was talking about his wounded child in here. He's a 74-year-old man. And he said, it's time for my wounded child to grow up. And I said, well, Terry, I said, that sounds like a little bit of an act of violence to your little boy. You know, I says, what if you could embrace him and tell him that he holds the keys to wonder and awe and playfulness? And instead of saying in a parental sort of way, you need to grow up, maybe you need to integrate him in a playful sort of way. He has a vulnerability. So what if you could meet his vulnerability, his fear? And once it's met, well, then it becomes okay then to meet the fear in the world. I realized last Sunday when I spoke about hearing the cries of the world, how can I hear the cries of the world if I can't even hear the cry of my own little boy inside myself? So that waking up and waking in is a huge thing. And Eckhart Tolle talks a lot about that in The Power of Now. The beginning of the book is all about the pain body, and the world seems to live in the pain body. Richard Rohr calls it the binary mind, the little self, the finite self that Emerson says wails and suffers. But at the same time, Emerson reminds us there's this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of all of us. So could we shift our identity to that part of us that is free, that is hopeful, that is unfettered by judgment and concern, that doesn't have a narrative that makes some people right and other people wrong? Could we locate that field within ourselves? That's waking in. And that requires that we do our spiritual practices. For some, it might be a simple act of meditation or a simple act of prayer. I know for Terry, when she works with her pots, she connects. I know with Anastasia, when she plays with her animals and her sons, that she connects to that love that's always there. So we get to discover how we navigate in that waking in phase. But the last phase that Locke Kelly speaks about is a waking out into the world. That's where you recognize that it's all you. And we have to decide what part of the world resonates with us that we want to serve. Now, I have this crazy husband of mine who's in love with trees. And so he has called the mayor, he's talked to the city arborist, because the Esplendis come around and they just kind of massacre a lot of the big old trees in Five Points. We had a new neighbor moved in, and he was very boastful about buying some of the smaller houses and turning them into rental properties. And he said he's going to make our neighborhood upscale again, but his one distaste was for the trees, so he started cutting down all the trees in the yard because it's an inconvenience to rake the leaves. And so then my crazy husband goes over to his house and asks if he could speak with him. And he said, we're trying to keep our old historic trees in Five Points, and I don't appreciate you cutting them down. To which the new neighbor said, get a life, and he walked away. So it may not all be met with a loving response, but you still get to take your action step. So when we wake out into the world, then it behooves us to stand up for what we believe in. I love these peaceful protests that are taking place on the planet right now around the Black Lives Matter movement. As we speak here in Huntsville today, they're carrying John Lewis's body. It's being on a horse-driven carriage across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, this great American hero. He was beaten on that bridge during the civil rights, and now he's being honored and glorified. Now, that may be a tacit way of saying enough is enough. Some people are saying maybe they should change the name from a racist name, Edmund Pettus, to call it the John Lewis Bridge. Wouldn't that be a leap in consciousness for Alabama? I'm just saying. Just like Trey Sometimes you have to find the courage to say something even when it's uncomfortable in the world. So waking up, waking in, and waking out. And I started realizing this is kind of like the trinity of being that Locke Kelly was talking about. Richard Rohr, we've talked to him so many times at the center. He's one of my all-time favorite mystics. He's a Franciscan monk who dares to tell Catholics that they got their program wrong. He says, you got to get rid of God in the sky and realize that what Jesus and what our biblical historians were talking about was the trinity of being that exists within all creation. And then there's the three again. Richard Rohr, he says, the Father is this transcendent something that awakens within us. There's that wake up again. This divine presence wakes up. That's the Father. The Son would be you and me waking in to our humanness. There's a little book by Temple Grandin that my prayer partner was telling me about. I have to order it. And any of you animal lovers might like it too. Temple Grandin wrote a book called How Animals Make Us Better Human Beings. Isn't that a beautiful thing? So what if in this waking up, in this finding the Son, we're all sons and daughters of the living Christ, of the living presence? Even the four-leggeds and the two-leggeds. God doesn't just exclude himself, herself with the human species. I think God's in a tree. And you know what dog spelled backwards is, don't you? Michael knows that. So what if in this waking in, it expands us into a greater order of interconnectedness? And then the third part of the Trinity is the Holy Spirit. Now the Holy Spirit is this life force that never dies, that lives on throughout eternity. And when I taught the Gospel of Thomas, these are the logians, or the sayings of the master teacher Jesus. And of course, the Christians hate the Gospel of Thomas because it turns the tables on everything that they teach about in the institution. And one of the things that Jesus says in the Gospel of Thomas that kind of was like a God smack for me was, you can kill the Father and you can kill the Son, but if you kill the Holy Spirit, ye shall perish. Let those who have ears to hear hear. So what would that Holy Spirit look like if it was alive in you? It's the breath within the breath. It's the aliveness within our soul. Could we discover that spark within our heart? In that opening treatment meditation, I invited you to heed the guidance of the teacher within yourself, the Holy Spirit within. Could we heed the guidance of this Holy Spirit? So I'm speaking about intention today, and the key is, where are your intentions coming from? Are they coming from this wise part of yourself, or are your intentions being directed by the binary mind? By the critical mind, by the judgmental, by the opinionated. Now, the Western world loves to be caught up in judgment and calling this good and this bad and this right and this wrong. But what if we could realize that if we came from an open-hearted awareness place, we could set intentions that are different kind of intentions. Ernest Holmes, who developed the science of mind, one of his very last books was called A New Design for Living. And he ended that book saying, if you want a new design for your life, you have to have a new operating system from which it emanates. We have to make that shift into a higher order of who I perceive myself to be, and you perceive yourself to be, and then let those intentions come from that place. And then we will kind of stand in awe of, oh my God. You know, we're teaching this wonderful class on Wednesdays, and one of the teachers said, when we surrender to a divine idea, oftentimes our local things fall apart. And when you surrender to the universe and say, okay, use this life, it belongs to you, oftentimes it will come to us as a great shock, how it transforms us. And oftentimes the most painful, uncomfortable things become the most transformative things for our lives. And as I was reading that, I thought, what was the most painful moment for me that completely changed my life for the better, but while I was going through it, was absolute hell on wheels? And what flashed into my memory, remember, located, was, oh, I was just graduated from college. My partner at the time, he was 25, I'm 21. No, he was 26, we're 5 years difference. And we had planned to go to Europe and get a 3-month Eurail pass our whole time in college together. And so we're at John F. Kennedy Airport in New York City. And as we're ready to get on the plane to go to Europe, he says, I'm not going with you. I'm going back to Colorado. I got a new boyfriend. His name was Trey. Hello. And I got on that plane by myself, and I was crying. I'm 21 years old. I'm thinking, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I found myself. I found that the love I was looking for was in here all along. So what if the universe, in its wisdom, oftentimes gives us these 2x4s to change the way we navigate into this life form? So setting an intention at this stage of life is not the intention I would have had when I was 21. I'm 71 now, and the intentions are different. Now, intentions are not like goals. You know, it was Wayne Dyer that did a beautiful series. It's on PBS. You can watch it. I think it's 10-hour-long talks called The Power of Intention. Intentions are like seeds that you sow in the garden. Ernest Holmes said in The Science of Mind, if you plant a carrot seed, don't expect to have a radish come up. Huh. So if you plant a negative seed, don't expect to have something positive arise. So we're always planting seeds of intention. What seeds are you sowing in consciousness? Because consciousness will take the seeds of our thought. Thoughts are creative. This is basic science of mind. The earliest Science of Mind 1 class say thoughts are things. They're creative. They're like seeds that you sow in the soil of consciousness. So are you sowing positive, affirmative thoughts? That's why when you're a brand new Science of Mind student, you learn affirmations. You know, you may think that you're no good, loser, failure. So you do a little spiritual pull-up. I'm perfect, whole, and complete. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm worthless, and I'm no good. I'm perfect, whole, and complete. I'm smart. I'm capable. I'm beautiful. Being the best me I can. And the more you do, you begin to reprogram yourself. I'm not the lowly scum in the dust that I used to think I was, that the church told me I was. I'm rather, what is man that thou art mindful of him? It says in the 8th Psalm, thou hast made him a little lower than the angels and hath crowned him with honor and glory. So could we know that the Bible was really saying we're here to honor and glorify the greatness of the universe in our humanity? Well, that's a whole different way of seeing your life. So could we sow those seeds of intention and let it begin to flower? You know, I am one with God. I think, was it you, Anne-Marie? Someone put these little cards on my desk. They're all these little affirmations. They're really lovely little affirmations. And I remember in the center in Atlanta when I used to go there, they have a big basket out, and you would draw when you left the service. You would take a little affirmation. It's like a little seed thought you could take with you throughout your week. I remember one time I took a little, it was a Mary Oliver saying, and I carried it with me everywhere. And Mary Oliver asked a simple question. So she said, so tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and passionate life? Wow. Just hang out in that question. Tell me, what do you plan to do? You've been given this life, this precious thing. And I know we have lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. I was listening to Barbara Marx Hubbard, and she said, you know, we've had 5 mass extinctions on the planet. She's a futurist. And she says, we have to be careful that we don't have a 6th mass extinction. And she said, for 18 billion years, life has been on this planet. She says, so what you're looking at is not an 89-year-old woman. You're looking at an 18 billion-year-old evolutionary soul, you know, who is here to evolve at a higher order of being. So her whole purpose was to ignite this shift in consciousness, to set an intention for what she calls homo universalis, a universal human, no longer identifying with our little self, our binary mind, but awakening to the Christ consciousness, the Christification of humanity. So the second coming is coming throughout all of us, this awakened self. That's the invitation, but it requires you and me to sign up for that, to link our heart with that, to set an intention. So Locke Kelly, in this lovely book, Shift into Freedom, he says there are short-term intentions and long-term intentions, and it's kind of fun. I invite you to get out your journal at home and ask what some short-term intentions are. For me, like a short-term intention would be to just breathe. Huh. I can even get simpler than that. The short-term intention might be to exhale. Because when people get upset, they tend to hold their breath. So if you just say, exhale, guess what? The inhalation will happen on its own. You don't have to make the inhalation happen. But the exhalation, sometimes you do. Exhale. Simple intention to breathe. Simple intention to be present. For Gene and me, simple intention to keep hope alive. I have hope that humanity is going to awaken somehow. How bad does it have to get? My prayer partner is in Canada. He said, it breaks my heart what's happening in America. He said, it sickens me. And he said, I've gotten to be such a crazy Canadian that they don't want Americans in their country because they consider us virulent. And he said, when I see a Washington license plate number, I want to call the Canadian police. He says, I'm becoming fearful of the Americans. And he said, I don't like that part of myself. So what if we could, we could be open to this, what's going on, and not run away from it anymore. So short-term intentions and long-term intentions. What did I write down? Short-term intention would be, to be attentive to the moment. All you have is this moment. Another short-term intention would be to be grateful. To be grateful to have good friends. To be grateful to have Michael show up here with his beautiful mask on and his servant's heart. To be grateful for Jean, who comes every Sunday so we can have a revealing servant, even if it's only her and me. To be grateful for a prayer partner who wakes up at 6 in the morning so we can have a talk. You know, to be grateful for a little girl who would take care of my garden when I would go up into the mountains and take care of my birds and my fish and my plants. You know, simple intentions to be grateful. Another simple intention would be to be curious. Life has given us this thing. Could I be curious how it's going to help heal us? I believe that everything is here for us. And if life gives us a life-threatening disease, if it gives us a pandemic, if it gives us John Lewis's death so he could be a reflection of a systemic racism, so we could see, are we going to allow a sign that says Black Lives Matter in our yard, or are we going to rip that up saying it offends us? To observe, to get curious, what are the roots of racism? It's wonderful to not deal at the level of effect, but deal at the level of cause. I absolutely love that Asheville, North Carolina is giving reparations, long overdue, to the Black community there. So what if we owe them a debt of gratitude? I love it when Barack Obama and Michelle were in the White House the first year they were there, and he spoke and he said, it feels so strange to be living in a house that was built by slaves. Wow. To tell it like it is. So a short-term intention would be to allow what is in life to be there. I'm going to read to you a little bit from the Joy of Meditation, because when that Terry, my prayer partner, and I were talking about our wounded little self, I said, it sounds to me like you want to get rid of him instead of integrating him. So could you allow him to be vulnerable? You know, when Anastasia went through and is still going through, I felt a vulnerability in Anastasia. She's going through that. When my pug had the herniated disc, I felt his vulnerability. He couldn't drink water. He couldn't eat food. He couldn't stand on his legs. So could I allow for that and not make it wrong, not make it something that I have to fix, but I could really embrace it and be present with it? Short-term intention. Short-term intention to be gentle. It has to start with me. And you know what? When I was a mess with Humphrey the pug, I found myself singing that Karen Drucker song. I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with my heart. I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. You know, could I carry that gentleness as a short-term intention, moment to moment to moment, when I want to spiral out, come back and just be gentle with myself? So those were some little fun things, short-term intentions. The last one I wrote down was to always be nurturing. To be nurturing my friends, to be nurturing the plants here at the center. Jean was telling me she's a would-be gardener, a new gardener, and she thinks she's found some butterfly eggs on her dill plant. And she brought the little dill plant in, and now she's got little caterpillars in her heart. And she said, now I've got some pet caterpillars. And I said, you know, there was a book there was a movie in the 40s, and it was called The Boy with Green Hair. It was one of my favorite movies. Dean Stockwell played the little boy. And this little boy had a caterpillar. He was all alone. He was one of those little kids that lived in his world by himself. And he had a caterpillar, and he had a harmonica. And he would play on his harmonica, I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I plenty of, baby. And the caterpillar would go like this. And I'm crazy enough that I love this movie. Well, the caterpillar one day disappeared, and he was bereft. The caterpillar had turned into a butterfly. And he, you know, he was grieving the loss of his caterpillar. And so he pulled out his harmonica, and he started playing. And as he started playing, I can't give you anything but love, baby, the butterfly was circling his head. I know those are simple little things. To set an intention to embrace that little part of you that sometimes we think is crazy and simple. But Jean's got her caterpillars now. So this is just a taste of Jeff Foster. He says, we invite all the buried rage up into consciousness, the part of us that is angry, so it can finally be met. He says, we connect with this furious little inner one, and we hold him in our arms at last. And we let him exist, we let him live, and we let him express himself in safe ways. It's okay to be angry. And we ask him what he needs deep down. He's no longer abandoned by us. He no longer has to feel unsafe. And what vulnerability was the rage trying to bring our attention to? He says, let us shower this precious little one inside of us with fascination and curiosity, with attention. Let's give him a home and the ability to find his voice so that he no longer is in control of us in a subversive sort of way, so that we can finally be his parent and not his slave. Does anybody know what it's like to be a slave to a reactionary side within yourself? I certainly do. You know, the one that always wants to be in control can be a horrible master. And when you realize you have no control, then you can surrender to a guidance system that doesn't have to be in charge, that doesn't have to fix the world. The world isn't a problem to be fixed. It's an opportunity for love to flower. So he concludes this way, when we befriend our anger, when we breathe into it, when we soothe it with a kind awareness, there can be a great joy, the joy of true intimacy with ourselves. It's very interesting when you're like me and you love to live in the question. One of the questions I like to ask my soul is, because we're really a soul with a body, not a body with a soul, and I ask the soul, what brings meaning into your life? Because the soul wants to find meaning. And then through lowly listening, what I heard was strange. My soul wants to be intimate with everything. You know, it wanted to be intimate when Gene told me about the butterfly. It wanted me to be intimate with my pug when he was lying paralyzed. It wanted me to be intimate with my little cat when she gave up the ghost and she died in my arms and I'm rubbing her neck. To be intimate with a plant, with a flower, with a tree. So what if the soul craves intimacy? Could I give that same intimacy to the exiled parts of myself, to the abandoned parts? And then when I can do that, I can embrace the abandoned parts in the world because we're in truth not separate. That's that waking up phase. We're not separate. And we may discover a peace that is not the opposite of the anger, but it was right there at the core of the anger. I love playing with the qualities of the divine. One of the qualities of the divine is there's abiding peace, a peace that passeth all understanding, it says in the Bible. Right in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of race riots, we can access this peace that's right there just by just touching our hearts. You know, meet the peace that's right there in the midst of it. In the midst of it. That's what he's saying. So peace is the peace that comes from holding ourselves close and celebrating all that we are, celebrating the great power of anger, which arises at times. It arises intelligently to protect us from harm, which is perceived and is at, or could be actual. He says, anger is not a bad thing. It's not wrong. It's not a sign of weakness or failure. It's a precious orphaned child knocking on the door of the present moment that's longing to let us let it in. Huh. Now, isn't that a much nicer intention to embrace the allness of us? When I was a brand new minister in Science of Mind, we tend to approach things in kind of a duplicitous way. We affirm the positive and we deny the negative. And so having never really done any psychological work, as a brand new minister, I found there was a book called Embracing Ourselves by Hal Stone. And he says, until you embrace all the sub-personalities within you. And so I gave names to my sub-personality. There was controlling Curtis and fearful Freddie and worried Walter and guilty George. I mean, I had them all. We all have them all. And once they were embraced and held, then they were no longer subversive in my life. They were no longer sabotaging me, so I thought. I didn't have to be Mr. Perfect. I could have an angry moment. You know, and you know, I get angry when I see people not wearing masks, when they defy the sign that says to the store person, where only people with masks can enter, and you have angry people that say, well, I'm not coming and shopping at your store then. That kind of makes me angry. So can I be okay with that anger? It's allowed. Embrace those parts of yourself. Then he talks about there's long-term intentions. I've made a little list of some of the long-term intentions. For Barbara Marx Hubbard, a long-term intention for me would be to constantly be evolving. You know, you don't get anywhere. It's a work in progress. When I was 17, it was a very good year. And when I was 25, it got even better. And now the days are gone. I'm in the autumn of my years. And I think of my life like vintage wine from final dregs, from the brim to the dreg. It poured sweet and clear. It was a very good year. We are evolving species. And if we don't evolve, as Barbara Marx Hubbard said, we're doomed. We have got to evolve out of this idea that we're better than some people, that some people are chosen and some people are exiled, or whatever the word may be. So to evolve continually, long-term intention, to see through the eyes of the beginner's mind, to see things with new eyes, not with conditioned mind. I love this place of I don't know what the answer is going to be, and you don't either. And in that I don't know place, we're teachable to possibilities. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind, he referred to the universe, or God, if you will, as the totality of possibilities. So what if we could evolve and get rid of Santa in the sky, who judges people, and have an evolving, living presence that's operating within us as the totality of possibilities? Could we imagine who we could be if we really knew who we really are? We're God in action, God in the making. Wow, how humble you have to be to say that. Another long-term intention. Ernest Holmes said in his Sermon by the Sea, something that was so profound that it's still working on me. He said, show me an individual who can be for something and against nothing, and I will show you someone who can transform the world. To be for something. So could we be for peace? Could we be for equality? Could we be for acceptance of all peoples? You know? It was interesting when Mahatma Gandhi was in India and they were fighting for their freedom from British rule, they would say to him, you are fighting against the British. And he says, no, I'm not fighting against British rule. I'm fighting for the freedom of the Indian people. It's very different. So could we be for peace instead of for war? Could we be for inclusivity instead of exclusivity? When I was in college in the late 60s, they were starting busing in the schools. And they proved that by forcing the integration, places like Alabama that wanted to keep segregate, separate but not equal, if we could integrate, there was a balancing that took place. Judy's been in a lot of segregated schools and integrated, I would venture to say. And we need this integration. So it requires a shift, an evolution. Another long-term would be, so to be for something and against nothing. Another one would be to heed the teacher of the heart. The more I evolve, the more I enter into open-hearted awareness, which is what this whole month-long series is about. If I'm going to live from an open-hearted place, then I must heed the guidance from that open-hearted awareness. Like when Anastasia had a troubled little puppy that was eating up her household and all her books, she had to find a skillful way to navigate and also take care of herself. And she did. She found a way to find summer camp for little Pepper, and she heeded the guidance of her heart. I love this little dog too much to give her back to some other person. And while I'm navigating, she can navigate at summer camp and hopefully come back a very well-behaved little pup, you know? So you learn to navigate. Another long-term intention is to rest as that peace that I spoke about, to rest as love itself, and to rest as possibility. Jeff Foster wrote a little book called The Way of Rest. And resting is just stopping. Stopping and letting what we are flower within us. So if I rest as peace, then the world could be absolutely crazy out there. You could be in the midst of a riot, and you are carrying this vibration of peace into the space. Jack Kornfield, one of my teachers, shared with me, he says, whenever I go to a hospital where things are uncomfortable and I'm concerned, he said, I put Kuan Yin on my left, which is the consciousness of compassion, and I put the Buddha on my right, which is the consciousness of equanimity, which says it just is what it is. And so, you know, Gigi's sister has cancer, my sister-in-law has cancer of the tongue, and could I approach them both with compassion and with equanimity and say we'll navigate as skillfully as we can? Then we're meeting the suffering of the world in a more skillful way. And the last one that I put in here was, for long-term intentions, to always be journeying from the head into the heart, to put them together. And this is the operating system from whence the intentions flower. So the new class that I'm thinking of teaching in the fall is Pema Chodron's latest book called Welcoming the Unwelcome. And she talks about that very thing, about this heart-mind, and they call the heart-mind in Buddhism the bodhicitta. She says, bodhi means awake and citta means heart. It's the awakened heart-mind. And our aim is to fully awaken our heart and our mind, not just for our own greater well-being, but also to bring benefit, solace, and wisdom to other living beings. What motivation could top that? That's your waking out. When I wake up from this heart mind, when this bodhicitta is setting the intentions, not only am I changing the way I live in the world, but I'm changing the world out there. Because consciousness is contagious. It is. We contagion each other. You can see it in a race riot, how racism can contagion racism. But also, love can contagion, love and gentleness. So here's how she finally puts it here. Remember, locate where the suffering is, embrace that suffering, then stop telling a story about it, and then remain there. As you welcome the pain, as you welcome whatever it is that you're struggling with, she says it has a way of transforming itself. So we commit to doing all it takes to free ourselves completely from all of our varieties of confusion and unconscious habit and suffering, because these prevent us from being fully there for others. This is the waking out. And when we are enlightened, we will be fully awake to our deepest nature, which is fundamentally an open-hearted, open-minded, and available awareness for ourselves and for others. We will know this to be true beyond any doubt, beyond any going back. And in this state, we will possess the greatest possible wisdom and skill with which we can benefit others and help them to awaken completely themselves. And then our question would be, how can I serve you? It's Rachel Naomi Raymond, this wonderful doctor from San Francisco, who tells her fellow doctors, she teaches at a medical university, she said, if you think as a doctor that you're here to fix problems, then you're identifying with the problem. If you think you're there to help people, you're almost implying that they can't help themselves. She says, but if you as a doctor, or I would say a minister, or as a human being on the planet, if you are here to serve the suffering, to serve the little worm from your garden, she was concerned that the birds were eating all the little seeds, so she brought the little butterfly seeds in, which became the caterpillar, into her house, and all of a sudden now she has caterpillars. So if you can serve even the least of these, Jesus said, it's better than serving an angel, to serve the least of these. So what if when this compassionate heart awakens, you will be shown what is yours to do in this waking out thing? So could our intention be so much bigger? It's not about me anymore. It's about when I find that operating system, then I'm literally transmitting that to the world, and we meet in that same vibrational field. I love to think of the spiritual practice as kind of like a tuning fork. When I tune into the divine, the invitation is, join with me in that vibration. The moment I met Terry and she told me the story of her childhood, I realized I resonate with that young girl who told her parents that I am not going to worship a God who will give us a rainbow as a sign once he destroys the world from floods. That's no kind of God that I will worship. And I said the same thing, different words, you know? So what if we begin to resonate with the truth? When I first went into a religious science and I'm sitting in the back of the room and I'm hearing something up here on the stage that I already knew, that I'm not a scum, that unworthy. Oh, unworthy scum that I am, that I'm part of the divine. And part of me said, yes, that feels right. That feels empowering. That feels supportive. Could I resonate with that higher last vibration? Lastly, since we're finishing off this shift into freedom, I'm going to give you the end of the book. I always chase right to the end of the book because they tell you where, this is where you're supposed to get to. Now, remember Locke Kelly is this very brilliant mind. And he talks about we have five minds that we operate from. The first mind, he calls it the egoic mind, the conscious mind. That becomes aware. He said the second mind is where you become aware of what's in the conscious mind, which he would call the witness mind. You're aware of what your thoughts are. He says the third level of mind would be called the awakened mind. The mind that is, he calls it awake awareness. It sees things not from your binary mind, your local mind, but it sees things as they are, the suchness of life. The fourth level of mind, when you're getting more and more intimate, he says it's called the spontaneity mind, where simultaneously with a thought that might come up from the egoic mind, right in the midst of that is an awakened presence. So you can still have your human thoughts and your human feelings and your judgments, but in the midst of that, the peace is there, the clarity is there, simultaneously. But the final stage of mind is what he called open-hearted awareness. And that's what I started this month with talking about, and I'm going to end with his little definition of that, and then we'll go into a little closing meditation to anchor it in your own self. Here's what the final mind is. Okay, from open-hearted awareness, we welcome all thoughts and emotions as we recognize that the same awake awareness that exists in us is in all creation. We're all the same awareness. We don't have a belief system. Could we meet not in our belief system? Can you imagine if the politicians could meet not in belief, but they could meet in an awareness that's open-hearted by nature, that cares for all our children, even the ones on the border? I'd like to throw that one in. We move from witnessing self to no self to seeing from being. So we'll witness that there is a me, yes, and there's a no self, there's something that's me, and then there is just the state of being. The Sufis, there's a word for it called kun. We are this something, being itself. So we move to this beingness where you feel nothing is missing. And you, in quotes, as this open-hearted awareness, cannot be harmed because there is no finite self anymore to harm. What you are can't be hurt. What you are is this presence. Could you hurt the sky? Could you hurt the ocean? And you are that ocean, ocean of love. You are that vast sky of mind. Yes, clouds appear in it, thought patterns appear in it, but you're that space in which they arise. You move from the content of me to the context of that. We are that. Tatwam asi. I am that. What is that? That is everything and nothing. Huh? When I know I'm nothing, then wisdom flowers. When I know I'm everything and everyone, then love flowers. Could we walk between these two realizations? I'm nobody and I'm everybody. He's saying that here. And from the support of this open-hearted awareness, we then begin to detox repressed emotions. It's time to do the detox dance. And rewire our brain for the better. To talk about possibilities, to talk about potential, to talk about a world that works for everyone, not just rich, white, privileged people, but a world that works for everyone. To have that conversation, feeling part of a field of life. We can then focus with local awareness, and compassionate activity becomes our natural expression. We care about the environment. We care about the trees. We care about the air that we breathe. We care about having clean water in our lakes and our streams. We care about this beautiful planet that supports us, and we hope that it will survive. So I'm going to invite you to just go within me just for a few minutes at the end and invite the wisdom from your heart, mind, from the bodhicitta within you to whisper a little short-term intention for you. And to really heed the guidance from that still small voice within that doesn't get louder but gets clearer when we become still. So what would open-hearted awareness have me be? And feel into that question. And ask yourself, am I willing to heed the advice from that compassionate, loving presence that's within? The bodhicitta. Feel yourself breathing it in and breathing it out. Imagine Kuan Yin on your left, this compassionate consciousness. And imagine the Buddha on your right, that which accepts all things, the suchness of life. So compassion and equanimity are journeying through your breath, through the energy of the bodhicitta, that open-hearted, loving presence within you. It's waking up, it's waking in, and cleaning you, and cleansing you, detoxing you, and it's waking out into the world, offering your beautiful presence, your beautiful example, your beautiful energy, your beautiful truth that you dare to speak to the world. Even if your truth is to say, no, that's not acceptable. I will not pray to a God who gives the world rainbows after he kills everything and everyone. The clarity that comes from a child's wisdom. Could we have the intention then to embrace our child, the wounded one and the wonder one, to embrace the all of us in short term and in long term? Could I have inner intentions that are there to expand and uplift and to heal? And could I have outer intentions to serve and to be present in the world, not running away from it, but offering the gifts that I have to the world? We rest in these questions, not to find answers, but to find a willingness to be all that we are, and to say yes to that willingness. To say yes to the possibilities and the potential that arise from someone who has the sincerity of heart to be and to serve and to allow and to accept and to deeply know This is why we are here. I invite you to place your hands over your heart now, and if you're comfortable, say the heart salutation with me. I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You
are an aspect of myself.
The beloved in me bows to
the beloved in you.
In this place, we are one.
So it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.